In a world where uncertainty reigns supreme, where shadows of chaos dance at every turn, one truth emerges unyielding. Preparation is not a luxury, but a lifeline. Behold the Wellness Company, a beacon of readiness amidst the tempestuous seas of fate. Envision a sanctuary of tranquility, where the tumult of unforeseen medical crises finds no purchase. The Wellness Company's Medical Emergency Kit stands as a bastion of assurance, a fortress of resilience against the unseen foes of health. Within its sacred confines lie the tools of salvation. Ivermectin, to ward off the insidious whispers of disease. Emergency antibiotics, to quell the raging storms of infection. Antivirals, to vanquish the relentless tides of contagion, and more. The Wellness Company Medical Emergency Kit is not merely a collection of supplies, it is the embodiment of preparedness itself. Crafted by the hands of esteemed healers led by luminaries such as Dr. Peter McCullough, Dr. James Thorpe, Dr. Harvey Risch, and Dr. Drew Pinsky, this kit stands as the pinnacle of safety, the zenith of prevention. These truth-seeking doctors have forged a testament to vigilance, a testament to the unwavering pursuit of well-being. Embrace the certainty that comes from being armed against adversity. Embrace the Wellness Company, for in its embrace lies the promise of resilience, the promise of a brighter tomorrow amidst the chaos of today. Don't wait for the next crisis to strike. Visit twc.health/strangeplanet and use promo code STRANGEPLANET for an exclusive 10% discount. Prepare today and rest easy tomorrow.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Jim Harold coming down in 3, 2, 1.
Richard Serrett's Strange Planet. Following the truth wherever it leads. Exposing evil and corruption and the secret machinations of powerful elites. Revealing the high strangeness beneath the surface of our supposed reality. Coming to you from the Great White North and his studio beneath the stairs. Here's Richard.
Hey there, Merry Christmas, and welcome to this very special Christmas edition of Strange Planet. And if you'd like to get deeper into Strange Planet, you know what to do. Click on that link in the episode notes, strangeplanet.supportingcast.fm, strangeplanet.supportingcast.fm. There are three premium subscriptions to choose from. Choose the one that's right for you. But essentially, you get access to commercial-free listening. I love my sponsors, but occasionally it's kind of nice to listen without the commercial interruptions. I also produce bonus episodes exclusively for premium subscribers, so you get access to bonus episodes and, of course, a subscription to my monthly newsletter, Inner Sanctum, strangeplanet.supportingcast.fm. Well, I don't know about what goes on at your house at Christmas and traditions that you have, but we love to tell stories. We usually have the fireplace roaring, and sometimes we tell ghost stories, but more often we just sort of reminisce about Christmas's past. I guess that's kind of the ultimate ghost story, isn't it? The ghost of Christmas past. We're going to tell some stories tonight with, I think, one of the consummate storytellers. Jim Harold is among America's most popular paranormal podcast hosts. He's got a number of free programs, the Paranormal Podcast, and of course, Jim Harold's Campfire, which is, it's a holiday favorite, but it's a favorite all year round. He's developed a loyal following over the last nearly 20 years, I think, spanning the globe. And he's also written a number of books, his True Ghost Stories series. He's got the True Ghost Story adult coloring book. I think he's up to volume 5, maybe working on volume 6. Yeah, 5. Six.
Working on 6.
Working on 6 of True Ghost Stories, Jim Harold's Campfire. And there he is, Jim. Hey, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing well. Merry Christmas, Richard, to
Merry
you
Christmas.
And your audience. And just good to be here to talk about Christmas ghost stories. And just one of my favorite times of the year, because I think it is one of the, maybe this and Halloween are the two times of year that we older folks, as they say, we grown-ups, I think we kind of slough some of that off and we bring back our childhood and a sense of wonder. And there is really something magical about this season. I don't think there's any question about it.
For sure, for sure. What happens on, what do you do on Campfire at Christmas?
Well, every year what we try to do, this year was actually special. We had the great Jeff Belangeron, who's written a story, a great book, The Fright Before Christmas, about Krampus. Mm. And then what we do is we add in some new Christmas campfire stories and we revisit some classics. Our callers come in and share their encounters with Santa Claus and all of those different things. And it's just a great time to reflect. And again, as I said, you know, and as you mentioned, you know, you think about your family and the quote ghosts of Christmas past, and it's just a great time. It's perfect for storytelling.
I saw the thumbnail for your podcast on Krampus on social Instagram. I think I saw it there. Who does your artwork on for those thumbnails? It's absolutely fabulous.
I gotta tell you, that's our friend AI. I've been using AI for the better part of this year, and it's not usually the first time it comes up, but for this, you know, I put in a prompt, have Krampus sitting by a campfire, and I had to do it a couple times, but usually it comes up with something. And this is probably another topic, and but I'm very interested in AI, and I have mixed feelings about it. I think on one hand, it's going to be fantastic. And on the other hand, maybe not so fantastic, but it's been great for my artwork. So yeah, people are saying, who's your artist? And I said, I'm sorry, it's AI. But it's kind of fun to play around with and get those different figures. And I try to make it very evocative. We just had one where someone was chased by a ghost truck.
And oh, I saw that too, yes.
Yeah, I got a great graphic of this, you know, semi right on top of these people in this little small car. And it just captured the spirit of the story perfectly. So
yes.
But it takes some back and forth, but it's kind of a fun little thing to do.
It is. My son North does my he packages the Rumble Channel videos and the YouTube videos, and he uses AI for the thumbnails as well. But the skill is, yes, it's also in the prompts. If you say, you know, I'm doing a show about dinosaurs, and you know, and slap in whatever you get. But if you've got to refine it, and as you say, the proper prompt. So it's all about how you instruct the AI. There's a skill to that.
Yeah, I think it is, and you know, sometimes it's maddening, and sometimes like this doesn't work, and you kind of change your direction. But it is really interesting. You know, and I think that that AI will be very important to us, but I think in the long run, humanity, I still have faith that humanity will win out, and that hopefully AI will just be a tool, just like we use the internet as a tool, we use computers as a tool, and hopefully AI will be a tool and not be the one who's telling stories in the future, that it'll still be us, Richard, that we'll still be telling the stories.
Exactly. Yeah. Let's hope that we use it as a tool and not the other way around.
Yeah.
All right. So let's get to Campfire. And you have, I understand, an all-time Christmas campfire story that, when did this come to you?
This had to be back in 2010 or something. And it's really neat because in years past, this year we're doing a holiday Christmas card contest. In previous years, we did an ornament, and I had somebody send me a beautiful ornament based on this story, because I thought it was just such a striking story. And it's a simple story, but it's just very evocative. This was probably back in 2010. Adam from Connecticut called up. And he said that his family was scattered all across the East Coast. But this particular holiday season, they all decided that they would get together, and they rented a big house in Vermont to celebrate Christmas all together over a 5-day period. The whole family, aunts, uncles, cousins all came together. And And I mean, how neat is that? So they heard stories of it being haunted by the people who worked for the house and things. Now, all of the bedrooms were taken by relatives with kids. So Adam and his brother, you know, they said, we'll sleep on the couches out in the living room. And it was 2:30 a.m. on Christmas Eve, Richard. Adam and his brother, they were sleeping in the main area of the house, and Adam woke up. And then all of a sudden, he saw a tall figure at the top of a large staircase, you know, and it wasn't Santa Claus. And at first, he thought, well, maybe somebody from the family is getting up to use the restroom. This figure was perfectly still. And then he realized it wasn't fully featured. It was almost like a silhouette. He got the sense, though, it was dressed in a tuxedo. And then this figure starts walking slowly down the stairs, which would freak me out. It's like, what is this thing? And the thing was, is that, and I've heard this from other people, and I'm sure you've heard many stories of the supernatural, that it was not moving in a smooth motion, but it was kind of moving like in a herky jerky movement, like a puppet on a string, like a marionette. Now, Adam rubbed his eyes. He thought he was dreaming, but he wasn't. And this figure walks to the bottom of the stairs, and he kind of expansively looks around, like Adam said, it was almost like he was like, oh, I'm home at last, and it's great to be back. And then he said, in this weird echoey voice, and that's the one thing Adam said, the voice reverberated in the house. It didn't sound like you or I. And the figure said to no one in particular, oh my love, what a mirror image we are. Oh, my love, what a mirror image we are. And then simply disappeared.
What does that mean?
I don't know. That's been a question, Richard, I've been asking for the last 13 years. Oh, my love, what a mirror image we are. I don't know what that means. You know, I've speculated maybe it was his commentary on the, if it was some kind of ghost or something from a previous time, maybe it was his commentary on the universe and the fact that we're a mirror image. I'd almost speculated maybe it was a time slip, and I'm picturing a grand old house, probably at one point it would have been wealthy people, and you could picture someone coming back home in a tuxedo, like a dandy type person. And maybe he's commenting on the mirror image of time. Adam asked around the morning, and no one had any idea what he's talking about. His uncle had said that a head poked into his room that he didn't recognize, but he figured it was just a family member. But that was it. And then they went on eating their breakfast like nothing ever happened. But Adam, you know, and I think he contacted me not terribly long ago, a few years back, and said this still puzzles him what it meant. And that ornament, I wish I would have brought it with me, kind of in gold writing, and the person put like a figure of a person with a tuxedo on looking at a mirror image of themselves. And it's just an odd thing, because it doesn't really mean anything, or maybe it means everything. I don't really know, but it's always kind of been one of those, what I call head scratchers, one that I pondered over the years. What does it really mean?
Yeah. And not a particularly scary, you know, it's not ominous. It's a fairly, you know, innocuous encounter where they're just saying something that's kind of perplexing, kind of cool. I mean, this person is dressed in kind of a period costume.
Right.
It would be, you know, don't get me wrong, it would be startling to say the least, and
confusing
and so forth. But I don't know. It sounds kind of a friendly fellow.
Well, the thing is that I got to say this, Richard. Of course, we always tell people about the spooky, scary stories on the campfire, because people love those. And we usually have, you know, on a typical episode of Campfire every week, we have 8 to 10 stories. And there will be a significant amount that will fall into that, oh, terrifying, I was visited by a demon, those kind of things. Yeah.
Krampus.
But then, exactly. But the point is that my favorites are what I call head scratchers. They're things that don't quite add up. they literally have you scratching your head because you go, what in the world was that? And I think those are very true to life. I think many of us have had those. Mm-hmm. And those really are my favorite, just the ones that get you going, oh my gosh, what did that mean?
Yeah, they seem more real to me. In this case, particularly because the caller to the program didn't, it's not like he was trying to, it didn't sound like he was making up a story. Like,
no.
If you were making up a story about a visitor coming down the stairs, he would probably make him a little more menacing.
Yes.
He might say, what are you doing in my house? Or something like that.
Exactly.
Instead, he says something that is very, like he's speaking in code or something. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. You don't make that kind of stuff up. It's very cryptic.
It's funny because I got to say this, people will say, I mean, you've been doing these shows much longer than I have, but I've been doing them about a little over 18 years now. And the thing is people say, have you figured it all out? Do you know what all this means? And honestly, what I say is I have one thing I'm convinced of, and that is there's so many layers to our world we don't understand, so many things that we don't see, that the world is far stranger because, I'm looking at my desk and I have a, wood top here, and that's wood and that's solid and I can touch it, and that's the way the universe is. But I don't know that it is that way. I think it's far stranger and there's far more depth to it. And we just take for granted that reality is as we perceive it on face value. But I think it's much, much deeper and much, much weirder in some cases. Maybe we are a mirror image, Richard, and he was speaking a universal truth.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's far more complicated. We tend to simplify it and speak in kind of, archetypes, or we say ghosts, or we say UFOs. But in the end, I think it is far more complicated than just, beings from another planet flying a spaceship to planet Earth, or someone who comes back from the grave. Our whole notion of what is life after death, I think is an oversimplification of what's really going on. And I don't think our puny little minds, our mortal brains, are equipped to really even adequately describe what it really is.
Yeah, I would agree. I do believe that. I believe there's much more going on. But I think the supernatural is real. I have no doubt about it whatsoever. And I'm convinced of that. But ask me exactly what's going on and I'll say, your guess is as good as mine.
All right, so let's get back to Christmas. And one of the things about Christmas is it's all about family, of course, but there are a lot of people that don't have family, and Christmas is an incredibly sad time of year because the fact that they don't have anyone in their lives, it's reinforced during family holidays. And I know you have a very poignant story about that.
Yeah, this was Jerry from Chicago. This is just from a couple of years ago, and I love this story. Jerry said she was never much of a Christmas person. And this particular year, sounds like she was maybe, didn't have any real close family around. She had gotten out of over a bad breakup. And it was right around December 23rd, right around that time of year. And she was feeling really down. And she lived in Chicago. She lived on the second floor, of a house. And it was really very, very, very hard to find, she said. She said even when people were looking for her, they couldn't find the place half the time. She said she was feeling more grinchy than usual, at odds with family, and she was sad and lonely. She had no holiday spirit whatsoever, and it was a very cold Chicago winter, and she was standing in her kitchen thinking of doom and gloom, and suddenly she heard a scratching at her back door. And she thought, oh, this is kind of a dicey neighborhood. Who's here? And she went and she looked, and there was a beautiful dog sitting there looking at her. And she asked the dog, what are you doing here? And the dog nudged the screen door open with its nose. And it just walked in her place. And she said, usually if you would see a dog in that neighborhood, it was a stray. And, you can tell a stray when you see one, not well-kept, anything like that. This was a beautiful dog. With a red collar, no tags, absolutely perfect. And again, she said, her apartment, external wooden stairs. Very strange that the dog would have walked all the way up there. And she said that this was just a beautiful dog. It was like dealing with Lassie. She let the dog stay, and she said, you know, I'm going to care for the dog until I can find the owner in the morning. The dog slept with her in her bed. And Jerry said, you know, somebody had said, Jerry, what could you use tonight to feel you, make you feel better during this holiday season? This is exactly what she would have asked for, a dog. So in the morning, she was going to take the dog to the Humane Society. But before she did, she let the dog out to go to the bathroom, as one does. And the dog ran off, and she never saw her again, never saw her in a neighborhood, nothing. But for some reason, that dog being with her that night, Jerry said, totally gave her attitude a 180, made her turn around totally. And she went on from there and came from a good place, and her life improved. And she believes that that dog was not just a dog, but it was basically an angel. And she hopes that that dog finds the next person who needs a Christmas angel too.
I believe they are angels. We don't deserve dogs.
Yeah, true. And I do think that kind of thing is possible. I mean, could you say that it's possible maybe God sent that dog in the form of a dog? Maybe the dog didn't even really exist. You know, maybe it was a creation of God to because who knows? I mean, she didn't say she was looking at self-harm or anything like that, but who knows? I believe at times that help is sent our way. We had a great story, if I can digress for a moment. We had a great story on the campfire about this young woman who was going to college. I think I've told it on the show. She was going to college. She was driving about an hour away from home. And this is before cell phones. This is the 80s. She's driving, you know, 8 o'clock at night, and it's in New England. It's cold. It's snowy. Her car gives out on the freeway. She can't just sit there. She doesn't want to freeze to death. She's like, and she sees down below there's a parallel road and there's a gas station or a service station. And she thought, aha, that's my salvation. She's not really in very winter-like clothes, you know, not heavy boots or anything. And she trudges down the hill and gets to that place. And she opens up the door and the guy's at the counter, and it's 7:55, I think it was. And she says, well, here's a situation. I need some help. And he looks at the clock and he says, well, I'm getting ready to leave, but maybe the owner who lives next door can help you. And then all of a sudden the owner like almost appears. Didn't see him come in. He just kind of appears. And anyway, he goes up, he looks at the car. He said, yeah, you know, I can't fix it tonight, but I can give you a tow. Where would you like to tow the car? And she gave him the name of the garage, which was like 20 or 30 minutes away. And he said, come on. And he tows the car to the garage and then offers her a ride to home, really going out of his way. And she asks what he wants, and he says, oh, $20, which, you know, for all the bother he's going through, wasn't much. And she writes a check, and he says, well, tell your family everything's going to be fine, which was kind of a weird thing to say. Everything is going to be just fine. So she goes in, and she just thought, what a sweet guy this was. What a great guy. So anyway, they're driving the same road a couple of days later, and she tells her family, let's go down here and let me show you where that garage is, where the guy was so nice to me. And she drives by it, and the place, which was very much open 2 days earlier, looks like it had been shut down two decades earlier. Mm-hmm. It was totally deserted. It was almost like a ghost mechanic. And again, I think that, and I know some people will say, well, what about the people who get in car accidents or die? Or what about the people who died in 9/11? Not everybody gets a savior. Not everybody gets an angel. That's true. But I think that some people do sometimes. I do think that help is provided in different forms. And sometimes I think a mechanic's just a nice mechanic. And maybe sometimes a dog is an angel. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
I think sometimes it's just not good, nice people. But sometimes I think there is a supernatural component to this, supernatural interaction where something or someone is sent to help.
Yeah, that's a wonderful story. It's a wonderful Christmas story. I mean, doesn't necessarily have to happen on Christmas, but it's a one of those universal themes, really. And I'm sure that changed her life. I mean, how could it not?
Yeah, it sounded like, I mean, she made that she really underlined that when I talked to her, that this wasn't just, oh, it made me feel better that day. It almost sounded like it was a jumping off point for her. It was a pivotal point in her life. And I think that we all have those pivotal points, whether we recognize them at the time. And, you know, when we talk on the shows about something like NDEs, and people talk about the life review and being able to see from the perspective of every other person that you interact with, the impact it has on them. You know, there might have been a day when you were an angel and didn't even know it. Maybe you held the door open for somebody. Maybe you said something as simple but sincere as, I hope you had a nice day. And probably on the other side, there's been a time or two where I've been short with somebody and maybe I ruined their day. So I think we all need to keep that in mind, that even the smallest interaction can make a big difference for people. And I think this is a great time of year to remember that.
That's so true. Every interaction we have with another person, a stranger, can make all the difference one way or the other. So yeah, we just have to be mindful. Doesn't take much. A smile, a thank you, and you can save a life, literally, without knowing it.
Yep.
Jim, we'll take a quick time out, come back, and discuss some more wonderful Christmas stories around the campfire.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Have you ever wondered why we call French fries French fries? Or why something is the greatest thing since sliced bread? There are answers to those questions. Everything Everywhere Daily is a podcast for curious people who want to learn more about the world around them. Every day, you'll learn something new about things you never knew you didn't know. Subjects include history, science, geography, mathematics, and culture. If you're a curious person and want to learn more about the world you live in, just subscribe to Everything Everywhere Daily wherever you cast your pod.
It's time to redefine reality. This is Richard Serrett's Strange Planet.
Jim Harold is back just in time for Christmas. Of course, the Paranormal Podcast and Jim Harold's Campfire. And he has developed a worldwide audience over the last nearly 20 years. I've got the ghost stories, Jim Harold's Campfire, volumes 1-5, plus the True Ghost Story adult coloring book. I'm told he's hard at work on volume 6. And if people want to get involved with Campfire, how do they do it?
Well, if people want to submit their stories in January, we're reopening submissions, jimharold.com/campfire. And they can submit their story there. And we'd love to hear their stories. And also, if they want to listen to the show, they can find us on any of the major podcast app, Jim Harold's Campfire and the Paranormal Podcast, and of course, jimharold.com.
All right. Let's talk UFOs. I mean, I know we're talking Christmas, but see if we can work in some UFOs into the mix here.
Yeah, this came from Stara. She's one of my listeners. She's from New York State. And this was in the Christmas season of 2021. She had moved from California a few years prior and was not familiar with the Hudson Valley UFOs, for example. And this was the general area she was in. And it was on a Thursday night. And She was watching television in her third floor apartment, and she noticed something unusual outside her living room windows. She said across the street, about 20 feet away and hovering above a street light, she saw three large symmetrical lights resembling car headlights. And she said these were distinct from the plane she usually saw at a nearby airport. Very different than typical fixed wing aircraft. Mm-hmm. And she was slightly apprehensive. She peered out her window and observed. And for about a minute, the lights remained stationary. Then the object turned, revealing its shape, and rose above the tree line. It appeared as a large, dark, triangular shape. And Richard, I know that you're familiar with, triangular UFOs from Belgium and so forth, that like UFO flap, Phoenix I think, lights. In the 80s. Yeah. Much larger than a standard aircraft with the... And she said, despite its size, the object made no sound as it glided away towards the Hudson River. And then her hairdresser told her that there had been a similar sighting reported in the Poughkeepsie newspaper. And Poughkeepsie is only 25 minutes away from where she lived. And again, this sighting, the Poughkeepsie one, involved three white lights forming a triangle captured on video. And as far as UFOs go, I find that triangular UFOs are some of the very, very interesting ones, and they always seem to be very large and very silent, and this fits that profile.
Yeah. And Hudson Valley is such a hot spot for UFO activity. Any theories as to why Hudson Valley is so frequented by UFOs?
I have no idea. I mean, maybe it's the relative. I mean, it is a little bit for a UFO. It's a very short distance, but maybe proximity to New York City. I don't know the answer to that. But a triangular, and we've had, forgetting his name, David, I can't remember his last name. We've had him on talking about triangular UFOs, and these are particularly fascinating to me because it seems to be a theme that many people see these. I remember years ago when Peter Jennings, right before he passed, I think it was the last major project he did before he got ill, he did that ABC documentary on UFOs, and they had a very interesting account, I think, from a law enforcement officer who saw, just as Star described it, low-flying triangular, very large UFO flying and making absolutely no sound. I think David Marler, I think was his name, the gentleman who did a book on triangular UFOs. But those have actually always fascinated me. And then when you think about the Christmas season, people talk about the Christmas star and the lights over Bethlehem, and may there have been a UFO component to that. I don't know about that, but I always find that an interesting thought. So I thought that was kind of an interesting thing that it did happen in the Christmas season.
Yeah, these triangular craft are just, as you say, they're often immense, like almost
size of a football field.
Exactly. And of course the Phoenix Lights is one of the great examples of that. Mass sightings too. Often these things are seen. It's not just somebody sees kind of a mysterious light or an orb. Sometimes these
are seen
by hundreds of people.
And the thing about the Phoenix Lights, I'll say this, I wish that it had happened a few years later when everybody had smartphones and so forth, because to me, the explanation that was trotted out at the time that it was flares just seems utterly ridiculous. And I believe it was Governor Fife Symington who the next day had a press conference and made light of it and so forth. And then I believe he later came out and said, no, this was real. I saw it too.
Yes.
And it really wasn't something to be making fun of at all.
All right. Let's get back to Christmas here. You have a story about a little girl who had kind of a sick teddy bear.
Oh, yeah. I love this story. And this again, Richard, this hints back at what I was saying earlier. I do think, and even, even I think sometimes that for a minute, I'm like, is magic possible? Well, maybe it is according to this story. This is Courtney from Kansas. And when she and her twin sister were both 5 years old, Courtney had a little teddy bear named Brown Bear. And it had a little music box in its ear. You squeeze it and it makes a noise. Well, you know what it's like when you're a kid and you have a beloved toy. It's just like, you know, I think I had a Curious George when I was a little kid. Absolutely loved it. But anyway, this Brown Bear broke 1 year and the music wouldn't play. So Courtney told her parents, I don't want anything for Christmas. I just want Brown Bear fixed. I want Santa to take Brown Bear to the North Pole and repair it. Now, of course, Santa Claus is real, but her parents figured that Santa Claus was too busy to bother with this. So her parents tried to set her expectations and said, you know, Courtney, why don't we get you another Brown Bear? Or why don't we get you this? Or why don't we get that? But Courtney was like, no, I want Brown Bear fixed. So anyway, Christmas morning, she left her Brown Bear near the hearth so Santa would be sure not to miss it. And she left a note detailing what she wanted done. So Christmas morning, the kids are running down the stairs. She goes right to Brown Bear. Brown Bear had been moved to the couch, and she pressed Brown Bear's ear, and lo and behold, Richard, it worked. Her parents looked absolutely shocked. And in later years, Courtney said, they're both very techie, very crafty, very good with this kind of stuff. They must have fixed it. And they said, no, we did not fix it. In fact, before she came on the campfire a few years back and told this story, she called her dad and she said, Dad, come on, level with me. You fixed Brown Bear, didn't you? And Dad said, absolutely not. So was it a little loose wire that fell back into place, or was it a little bit of Christmas magic? My vote is on the latter.
Same. Ditto. All right. Let's get a little scary now.
Mm-hmm.
You had some wonderful, feel-good Christmas stories. Do you have any nightmares before Christmas?
Oh, this one's spooky. This is another little girl, but it's not such a sweet story, Richard. This actually was sent over to us. Derek called him from Florida. And he said, you know, like a lot of kids, when him and his sister were little, they would wake up really early and see what Santa had brought. Well, 1 year, Derek's sister did that. It was very, very dark. She was about six this particular year this happened. And she was looking at the toys and she looked up and suddenly saw a solid black figure standing over her. She said, it wasn't flat, it had dimensions. Now she hadn't seen the figure when she entered the room and it made absolutely no sound. So it sounds like a shadow figure, Richard. Mm-hmm. She backed away. At first she thought it was her brother Derek, but she looked into his room and he was sound asleep. Also, the parents were sound asleep in their beds. She looked back. It was still watching her. Kind of reminds me a little of the Grinch. To this day, she's a grown-up. She says, this happened. It wasn't a dream. She was definitely awake. Everyone was asleep. The figure did not move and stayed there until she went back to bed. Now, they did have other paranormal experiences in this house, but that was the only time they saw this shadow figure. Now, can you imagine that as a small child? You're going, you want to catch a glimpse of Santa. Instead, you see this imposing, terrifying shadow figure. Again, that is a nightmare before Christmas. And that's a pretty rough memory for Christmas.
That would put me off my Christmas pudding, yes.
That's right.
Well, if Santa Claus is real, why can't Krampus be real?
Yeah. Well, I think there is a spirit of good, and I think there's a spirit of Santa. And I mean, and I think we can, I look at these Christmas themes and generalize them to things through the year. And Richard, I'm sure you've interviewed people over the years who have said, oh, Richard, there's no such thing as evil. There's lower vibrations.
Lower vibrations, right.
There's no real evil. And it's like, are you sure about that? Are you absolutely sure? So Do I think they're very beautiful and good spirits attached with Christmas? I absolutely do. And I think that they win out. But I also think there's some nasty ones out there, and maybe they make an appearance even under the Christmas tree.
100%. All right, another time out, back with more of my conversation with the one and only Jim Harold.
Overwhelmed by investing?
If you're anything like us, the hardest part is getting started. That's why we created the Investing for Beginners podcast.
Our goal is to help simplify money so it can work for you.
We invite guests to demystify investing.
At least try to be setting aside like the minimum 10% into the 401k.
We'll teach you the basics of the market.
Yeah, I think compound interest should be at the start of any discussion about investing. And
we've had investment professionals who teach in a simple way.
A valuation-driven bear market. You know, we haven't really seen yet, and I think everyone's thinking about it, but we haven't really seen yet.
Our Q&A episodes feature questions from listeners just like you.
So what do you think about the situation with ETBI, which is Activision?
I'm Dave Ahern.
And I'm Andrew Sather.
And we hope you join us on the Investing for Beginners podcast.
On the Investing for Beginners podcast.
I'm Andrew Gold, a fallen BBC journalist interviewing the heretics and rebels brave enough to speak out against mainstream narratives. Here's Coleman Hughes, John Ronson, and the Trigonometry podcast guys bringing controversy to the fore.
How'd you feel if a person of a different race moved in next door?
I spent a while with a politically correct faction of the Ku Klux Klan.
The system punishes people for wrongthink. It's heartbreaking.
Here's My Unorthodox Life Netflix star Julia Hart on getting out of a Hasidic Jewish cult.
Why can't I be okay with being silent and subservient? Everyone else is.
And biologist Richard Dawkins on trans activism.
It's perfectly legitimate to say, I'm a man, but I feel feminine. But to then say, therefore I am a woman, is just a betrayal of language.
Now it's your turn. Rebel against the mainstream and find a home in this sensible alternative space by subscribing to Heretics Podcast.
As you're staring up at the night sky, ever wonder who's staring back? You're listening to Richard Serrett's Strange Planet.
Jim Harold, and if you want to subscribe to the Paranormal Podcast or Jim Harold's Campfire, go to jimharold.com, or if you have a story you'd like to offer up for consideration on Campfire, you can get a hold of Jim there as well. jimharold.com, is it /campfire?
Correct. jimharold.com/campfire. And we take stories. The thing that I love about the show so much is the international component. And we've had, I had a show recently with people from Australia, New Zealand, Canada, the States, the UK. We get people all over, and I just love that international flavor to it, that we can do that. And but the commonalities are much more great than the differences in terms of spooky stories and things we hear. But it's just great, and we love to talk with people all over the world.
All right. So we had maybe an encounter with Krampus, hard to say. What about an encounter with Santa?
Yeah, this one actually has a little bit of a twist that's interesting. This goes back to about 1980, and Evan was 10 and his sister was 8, and they lived in Annapolis, Maryland. Their father was a naval officer and taught at the U.S. Naval Academy. So one December night, Evan and his sister, well, they had an extraordinary event. They were returning home. And they were walking out of the cars, and they noticed that Santa Claus was walking in the neighborhood. And he was a very kind of like legitimate looking Santa Claus, not like the helpers, but he looked like the real Santa Claus. So anyway, initially the Santa was not heading towards them, but they caught his eye, and Santa suddenly changed course and approached the siblings. Now, what made this so fascinating was Santa's familiarity with him. He greeted Evan and his sister by their full names, asked them if they'd been good, and casually walked away. And this brief but perplexing interaction left a lasting impression on Evan because they did not recognize this Santa as anyone they knew. Now, ironically, Evan has become one of Santa's helpers. He's a professional Santa Claus. And he says that usually children will recognize the familiar faces behind a helper, a Santa helper. Like, oh, you're really so-and-so. He says, in fact, kids will see him and they'll say, oh, you're really Evan. Not the real Santa Claus, of course, because Santa, the real Santa can't be everywhere. He has to have helpers. That makes sense. But this Santa was a complete stranger to them. It didn't resemble any local families, any local dads. Plus, while his family certainly wasn't poor, he says, you know, if you hire a Santa Claus to do something like that, the present day, it could be $150, $200. And his parents certainly weren't the type of people that would drop that kind of cash to do that. They immediately questioned their parents and said, did you arrange this? Did you set this up? Their parents said no. And interestingly, Evan and his sister remember this event. Years later, up until today, their parents don't remember it at all. So this mysterious encounter with Santa, it really influenced Evan. Sounds like it probably led to him becoming a Santa. And it's a weird but puzzling memory. And it just, sometimes you wonder, you know, I even at my age, I'm like, well, who knows? Who knows? It could be some more of that Christmas magic, Richard.
Well, you know, I believe in Saint Nicholas. I mean, Saint Nicholas was a real person. He was a saint, mm-hmm.
and absolutely.
Why not? Why not? Yeah. Why wouldn't he come back?
Yeah. I think it's such a nice thing to have that little room for wonder. I think we need more room for wonder in our lives, more room for magic in our lives, because, you know, it's kind of tough being a human.
Yeah, I don't want to live in a world without wonder. I don't want to live in a world where there's no chance that Bigfoot exists, where there's no such thing as ghosts or unidentified flying objects. What a boring world that would be.
I agree. Yeah, I look at people like, for example, like I've seen recently some interviews with Neil deGrasse Tyson. Brilliant guy. But boy, that must be boring.
what a bummer. Yeah, you're walking out under the night sky and the beautiful stars, and it's very romantic. And then he tells you, those things probably burned out 3 billion years ago.
Yeah, yeah. It's so funny because I just saw a clip he did about the tides and saying, well, they're not really coming in. We're the ones that are, and then that's great, but I think it's more romantic to have a tide coming in and all of those things. Yeah, it's true.
So we heard about the Christmas dog. Do you have a Christmas cat story? We got to be fair to the cat lovers.
Yeah, this is interesting because this story was from Chuck from Alabama, and his mom and sister were working at a women's shelter in Missouri. Now, Chuck was in college, and he had come home for the holidays, he was invited to go over to the shelter to help out. It was an old building from the 1800s, a two-story red brick revival house. Now, he said there was a strange feeling about the place as soon as he walked in. So his sister was working there. He had a great visit with her for a couple of hours. And as he was leaving, a gray cat came to sit at his sister's feet and started playing with her feet, biting at them and different things. And the cat looked around, and Chuck said he saw this cat in vivid detail, just like if you see a real-life flesh-and-blood cat right in front of you. He could see it breathing. He could see its hair. He could see it vanish into thin air. And his sister said, did you see something? And he said, yes, I saw a gray cat. And she said, well, there wasn't one there, but it's really odd because the director of our shelter has been complaining to his staff because they've been letting this gray cat in, and they all swore, we didn't let any gray cat in. There is no gray cat. But people had reported seeing this gray cat. In fact, Chuck's mom had thought there was a gray cat, the ghost cat that didn't exist, and actually brought cat food for it. one time. Now, weeks later, Chuck was back right at Christmas there, and his mom asked him to come by the shelter and help her move donation boxes. He took the first box upstairs, and while walking up the steps, he found an ornament on the stairs. He continued upstairs, picked up the ornament, and put it back on a nearby tree so no one would trip on it. He carried several more boxes upstairs, but then again, he found that same ornament that he put on a tree back on the stairs. And there's no way that it could have been there. And oh, by the way, what was that ornament of? It was of a gray cat.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, of a gray cat. He went, and his mom was working in the other room and said, "Did you put that ornament on the stairs? It keeps popping up on the stairs." She said, "No, I've been doing my paperwork here for the last hour. There was no one else in the building. It was a wooden ornament of a gray cat playing with a ball." And she said, same thing kept happening to her. That same ornament kept popping on and off the tree. So I guess it was a Christmas ghost cat who kept showing up at this shelter. And again, it goes back to the history piece, right? Place built in the 1800s, a lot of history. Historic places that have been around for a long time. More things happen. And I guess it extends to cats.
I love it. I love it. Do you have a Harold family tradition at Christmas at your place?
Actually, it's kind of funny. We have a lot of traditions. My wife is of Italian lineage, so there's a lot of different cookies and treats and bakery and all that great stuff that are made. And when I married her, I was thin. And not so much now. But one thing that we've took to playing, and I think it might be of either German or Polish origin, is the pickle game.
Pickle game.
What you do, are you familiar with the pickle game?
No, I love pickles, but I'm not familiar with the game.
Yes, it is. You take an ornament, and it was introduced to us by actually my wife's best friend, unfortunately, who passed. Her family, it was of Polish origin, and they used to play this. And you take a pickle ornament, and you hide it on the tree Christmas Eve, and then you have the kids try to find the ornament against each other, and then whoever finds the ornament gets a pre-Christmas gift, like socks or something like that. Yeah. Well, the funny thing is, Richard, our kids now are adults. My youngest is a junior in college. My oldest has graduated from college and is continuing her education to go on to become an optometrist. So they're both adults. So you put this pickle in the middle of your Christmas tree, and we have a really nice Christmas tree. We have years of ornaments that we built up over the last 20 some years and just things you would never want broken. And you hide this pickle tree, and these two adult girls are basically playing NFL football, trying to block each other out of the way to get the pickle first. It's a beloved tradition. I think that's one of my favorite traditions in the Harold household, the pickle game for Christmas Eve.
That's wonderful. The pickle game.
Yeah, it's like rugby.
Yeah. Wonderful. I think we got time for one more. A Christmas gift that didn't want to be given.
Yeah, and this reminds me of something called Jot. Mary Rose Barrington, now you've probably more than likely over the years had interviewed her at one point or
other. Oh, yes, many, many times.
Yes, and anyway, she talked about Jot, just one of those things, whereas an item gets lost and it reappears in a place it shouldn't be. And this is a story. This was back in 2018, and the story's from Julie from Texas, and they were in Germany and were spending a lot of time attending those beautiful Christmas markets they have. That's something I wish we had over here in the States. But anyway, she was at a little antique shop, and she decided to buy a cross pendant and a cute little bracelet to give to her two sisters for Christmas. A few days later, she was packing things up to send to her sisters, found the bracelet, but the cross pendant was gone. So she thought she must have dropped it on the way to the car. She sent something else, forgot about it, and moved on. Later, Her husband found the items in his breast pocket, but thought it was weird because he wouldn't have usually put them there, but that's where it ended up, the cross pendant and the bracelet. So anyway, she found these things, right? She put them in a specific drawer so they wouldn't get lost to send the following year. No thought of the supernatural, just something mislaid. So then fast forward to Christmas time, 2019, she looked for them in the drawer and they weren't there either, this drawer that she put them in. She was really second guessing herself at this point. So in the summer of 2020, they were moving from Germany to Texas, packing up. Their daughter helped them unpack when they arrived in Texas, and she found the bracelet and the cross. So Julie puts them in a jewelry drawer, very deliberately not to lose them. She said, "I have them. They're here." She told both her daughter and her husband. Christmas 2020. This time the bracelet's there, but the cross is gone.
Oh, man.
Then she says, "This must be supernatural." So she sent the bracelet to her one sister and a different cross to the other sister. A month before she called into Campfire, she was packing for a trip to Mexico. She packed very, very carefully. In Mexico, a vendor was selling beaded glass strings. She bought two of them and she stuck them in a zipper pouch in her purse. She gets home, she takes out these glass chains, and tucked in a little ball of the two chains inside them was the cross pendant.
Oh, man.
She put a chain on it and now she wears it because it clearly doesn't want to be given away, as her husband says. That cross must have been meant for Julie because it was sticking with her all the way. So that was the gift that didn't want to be given.
Wow, that's a great story. I would love to be able, I would love to see that cross pendant. I'd love to touch it.
Maybe it had some special significance and it knew that it was meant for Julie, you know? Maybe that's what was going on, but it just refused to be given away.
Wow. Jim, always a delight spending time with you, especially over the holiday season, and you are a gift that keeps giving. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Richard. I really appreciate it. You're one of the greatest supporters of what I do, and I thank you so much for that. And I wish you, your family, and your fantastic audience the merriest of Christmas and the happiest of New Year's.
And the same to all of your Campfire and Paranormal Podcast listeners, and to you and your wonderful family. God bless you. Merry Christmas.
A new Richard Serrett's Strange Planet drops every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday.